Hear a squawk. On this episode of The Pine Talk, Ezra and Peter will share their stock of information to keep you up to date around the clock. I am Ezra, a young software enthusiast who loves floss. And I'm with...
Peter. And I'm just a regular dude. And you may know me from my PinePhone videos on YouTube. But Ezra did some too, right? So
I sure did.
You may know of us both from YouTube. And the big question that we need to address in this introductory episode is, what is PineTalk?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that website says something like it's a podcast by the community for the community. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. So it's not just us, it also is you. So we're definitely going to need your feedback, your questions, and also your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, community participation is always a good thing, right?
Yeah. So while it's just us two right now, maybe we can find a way later on to at least make a few episodes where more people can join in. There would be ways to do that using open source software, and we'll certainly explore that. But if you've got different ideas, please share them with us. No, what's that email address?
It's pinetalk@pine64.org. That's where you can send your questions and ideas. There's also going to be a PineTalk chat channel on the Pine64 Discord server.
It already exists, and there are some people in there. And while we...
Oh, really? I haven't checked.
It already exists. I'm not a huge Discord user, so I actually haven't spent a lot of time there. And there's already content about pine nuts. So that's pretty great. And some random questions. And some people were like, Pine Talk seems like a misleading chat name, because one would mistake this for general chat, which is a good point. But let's just say the names for a podcast that you can actually choose turn out to be surprisingly limited every then and now.
Yes.
There was a different working title for this. But that was already taken.
Sadly. I thought it was a great one, too. But Pine Talk's okay.
We'll make the best out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what choice do we have, right? So let's just do it and get into it. So what's generally planned is that we will... go into the Pine64 community updates. We're not going to do this for this episode. This is introductions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you will know who we are, what our experiences with technology, broadly speaking, have been. Because, let's face it, the Pine64 community, at least I think, is mostly about technology and free libre open source software.
Mm-hmm.
It's about some single board computers and stuff you can build out of those, like phones or tablets or notebooks,
mm-hmm.
or laptops, whatever you want to call those. Mm-hmm. And many other products around that, like the Pine Time and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So what is Pine Talk? Well, it's going to be whatever you wish it to be. Maybe not really. That's impossible, right? Because people are, I think, too different to achieve that. But we are going to try our best.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's do something that we are better at right now. And that is introduce ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ezra, I need to ask, What was your first computer?
That's a really interesting question, because my very first computer I had, I have to say, when I was probably 8 or something, 8 to 10. It's hard to remember exactly how old I was and what the year was, which would be 2008 to 2010. And it was a old used computer that had Linux pre-installed, which means my first computer was a Linux computer. And since I didn't have any previous computer experience before that point, I actually found it somewhat intuitive. It was running Ubuntu with GNOME 2, and it was back when the user interface was very brown.
I remember those days.
Those are the good days. Good old days.
And it made all those earthy noises. Mm-hmm. You know, those system sounds. They were like, boom, 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 like African drums.
Yes, yes. It was an experience, to say the least. But I would say my first real computer I had a few years after that, which was a some kind of pre-built or pre-parts chosen computer, which my dad got me off of Newegg, and we assembled it together and made a whole activity about together. But that computer had Windows on it as its operating system, but eventually got Linux in due time. What about you? What's your first computer?
Well, it's tough to say, because I didn't have my own computer, I think, until I was about 13 or 14 or something like that, because my parents weren't really into tech or computers at all. So the first computer I ever used was one of my parents, and that was some old Apple Performer 600, I think. So it had, I don't know, some old Mac, a Motorola 68K processor at 32 megahertz, and had like 4 megabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, ran System 7, which was, well, I really liked it at that time, but by today's standards, you would have to say that, well, it was okay for its time, but all in all, it was a terrible operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I could use, and there were no games on that thing. That computer must have been purchased around 1992, so that dates me, because I was already turned 7 in 1992, so yeah, I'm quite old, at least compared to Ezra.
Yeah, I turned zero in 2000.
I turned 15 in 2000. Guess what? Yeah, and so it didn't have any games, so I really spent my time going through all those system preferences, and there was a Symantec GradeWorks installed, which was some kind of, well, Microsoft Office clone, so some Office software. And I really went through every option in the menu of that software. So it's actually, I think, if I were to remember all that, it would still be the software I'm likely best suited to use, because I know it by heart. Because when did I ever since do that? You know, I edit my videos in KDE Live, but have I explored every option in the menu of mm-hmm. that software?
Mm-hmm.
Hell no. Of course not. And yeah, that was this Macintosh experience. And my first computer I had then was something my parents gifted to me. And that must have been around, yeah, I don't know, 1999, 2000, something like that. It was Intel Pentium with 90 megahertz and 40 megabytes of RAM and 800 megabytes hard drive.
Wow.
So that's, by the way, 10 times of what that Macintosh had. It had a 80 megabytes hard drive. That thing ran Windows. Well, it didn't have an operating system pre-installed, so I installed Windows 98 because we had that lying around from another PC my parents had purchased previously. So I illegally reused that. And the good thing about that computer was that I got to open it and tinker around with it. I took it apart. I put in a CD-ROM drive because it didn't have one. I figured out how to connect a keyboard because it didn't have PS2 plugs, which were what you had previous to USB. It didn't have USB. It had some older plug, and then I figured out how to get an adapter to connect the keyboard that I had bought. Mm-hmm. And so on. So I learned a lot with that system by, well, sheer. This computer, I really don't like it, but hey, it's my computer now, so I'm going to use the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. So that was my perspective. And then shortly later on, I built my first computer. I'd saved some money and bought a motherboard and some AMD Duron CPU and I don't know some NVIDIA GeForce 2 MX graphics card or something for I don't know like about $500 and put that together and I had researched it well enough that it just worked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first computer, and on that thing I actually ran Windows.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a big enough hard disk that I could also dual boot Linux. I think back then it must have been either SUSE or Mandrake. Mandrake is something that lives in Mandriva or Open Mandriva today. And SUSE back then was something you could buy, and there was a book in the box and it was a DVD with tons of software pre-installed, and SUSE, of course, you may know OpenSUSE. So, mm-hmm. And both of those operating systems are actually on the PinePhone. But so that was my first experience with computers and Linux.
That's very interesting. I could clarify that my first computer had an AMD Bulldozer in it.
Okay.
I think is what they called it. I forget exactly.
Yeah.
It was something like that. And that processor ran excessively hot. Like, I never ever turned on the heater. My computer was my heater.
Yeah, that's how it was back then. I think my Durons were pretty cool. But I remember that I switched CPUs rather quickly, and then there was a new one available, and I switched to a different mainboard because that had a slightly faster chipset. Mm-hmm. And so on. And I learned about that it really makes sense to run a CPU at a low multiplier and with a high front side bus and so on, because that improved the overall system performance and stuff like that. So that was a ton of fun. And there was one Duron CPU that I could then mod using a pencil. To become an Athlon. So you could unlock L2 cache via connecting some disconnected pins on the top of the processor. That was something that worked then for a while, and then it stopped working. So I had to go back, open the case, remove the fan, and make sure that that stuff was connected again.
Wow.
Yeah, that was. And you always had to test that then, you know, with memtest or something, so that you were sure that those disabled parts of that L2 cache were actually good and working and not broken.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tell me, what was your first smartphone, Peter?
Oh, my first smartphone, yeah. My first smartphone actually ran Linux. It wasn't my first phone. My first phone was some, I don't know, Motorola C450. And my first smartphone, if you can call that a smartphone, because you know, the definition of those early smartphones that were basically pre-iPhone is quite can be controversial. So it was a Motorola A780. If you look that up, what that looked like, it looked ridiculous. It was basically like a tiny personal digital assistant. So it had a stylus and I think a 2.4 or 2.6 inch screen. And that screen was behind a clamshell on which there was a numeric keypad, so you could dial without using that touchscreen. It really looked strange.
This is really cool,
but
actually.
But it ran Linux. Yeah, it's so weird, it's cool again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's what my first smartphone was, and the Linux it ran was, Motorola hadn't published a software development kit or something for it, so all you could do were some people had figured out how to build a couple Qt apps for it. It was running, I think, some Qt embedded Monta Vista Linux with a Linux 2.4 kernel and so on, and the real apps that you could install were some J2ME Java mini apps for phones, basically, that also ran on feature phones back in the day. Mm-hmm. That was around 2007 that I got that thing, and I was quite happy with it. Although it really looked weird. What was your first smartphone?
My first smartphone was nothing particularly special, but definitely something stressful. It was the Samsung A10, I think is the number, and it's a decent Android phone that does Android phone stuff, and it's able to run everything you'd expect an Android phone to run. It can even do some amount of advanced graphical, like gaming things too. But the stressful part came in with the fact that I had to sign a contract to get it, because the store that sold it to me, sold in quotation marks there, didn't actually sell it to me, but they just made me sign a contract that said that I'd eventually own it after a period of time. The reason I got a phone was so that I could more easily get a job, because otherwise I don't actually have a phone, a home phone. Yeah. There's no way to contact me professionally, so I got the phone so that people could contact me so I could get a job, and then the job would help pay for it. But getting the job didn't always work in my favor. I didn't always manage to get a job, and even once I did, it was really expensive, and I had to jump through some hoops to pay, so to actually just kind of cancel the contract and purchase the phone and own it. It was just overly complicated.
Well, that sounds like a bad experience, but that A10 is fairly recent, is it? Or have I found the wrong one on?
I think, no, it's possible that you got it. It is a fairly recent phone. I've not owned a phone for a very large portion of my life. I've managed to get by without it.
Yeah.
But I figured eventually I'd want a phone anyways, so I just kind of picked the cheapest okay one. Not knowing about the world of phones.
And contracts. Yeah, contracts are tricky.
Very, very tricky.
I have to say, I bought that. I didn't have a phone contract. I was using pay-as-you-go cards at the time. And I bought that Motorola A780 used. I bought it on eBay, actually. Okay, what do we have next here? Single board computers. Well, yeah, my first single board computer is totally surprising. Well, maybe it's surprising because this is the Pine Talk. It was a Raspberry Pi Model B. That's it. The first Model B. So it had like those 512 megabytes of RAM, and I still have it, but I don't use it currently. I've been meaning to use it as a print server to put cups on it and so on, but I haven't bothered yet. How about you?
I think mine's the same, if not like some kind of plus variant of the same one. I can't remember exactly which Raspberry Pi, but I also had a Raspberry Pi, although I am currently using it for various assortments of work in progress projects.
So you're still using that original Pi?
Yeah, exactly. It's been a few years now, and still useful, and I still got some things to experiment with it, and I still didn't break it.
Yeah, mine too. It's still running strong. When I use it, it currently is just sitting in a box somewhere and waiting for its next mission.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I have it. It's Great. Been on for a little bit now. I have it connected. I have an SSH server running on it, so I can connect anytime, yeah. And it's running on a headlessly.
Yeah, I used mine for a while with a Motorola laptop. Motorola made for their Atrix phone made a laptop that worked with basically everything that you could plug into it, which was, well, you needed some special cables, but you could just plug that stuff together and then it would work with the Raspberry Pi. And I tried to use that to have a Raspberry Pi laptop, basically. And that was not as fun as I had hoped it to be. It was way slower than I would have thought, and totally clunky, because then if you weren't getting the timing right between switching on the Raspberry Pi and opening the laptop, then it wouldn't work. It was fiddly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I played with that for a while, and then I actually got myself an ARM laptop later on, but yeah, that was the first Samsung ARM Chromebook, but I don't have that anymore.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that's a good segue to bring us to the next question we've got here, and that is, Ezra, what is your favorite Linux distribution?
That is a good segue and a very good question. It's hard to say, because I've definitely been somebody who distro hopped in the past a lot. But recently, I've been, for about a year, been using Fedora. And Fedora, I'm enjoying very much. I enjoy the package manager. I find it interesting and enjoyable that the default option when you install something using DNF is no. No is the default answer, which means if you're accidentally installing some things, you have to actively say, yes, that's what I want, instead of just smacking enter until the thing is done. So it's
that's what you enjoy.
Yeah, that's my my favorite part. But no, I enjoy it. It's much more stable than I had expected. I'm not sure why I thought it would be unstable, but people online sometimes would kind of made me believe that it was a bit unstable compared to something maybe like, I don't know, not Fedora.
Ubuntu.
But before
Debian.
That,
CentOS.
CentOS. Debian is pretty stable, but requires some heavy configuration. But Debian has like the best way to describe their OS. They call it the universal operating system. I think that's very true. Debian is designed not to be easy to use, but so that once it's all built together, that if you don't touch it, it should run just fine for seemingly ever.
Yeah, that's true.
Otherwise, I enjoy Arch at a theoretical level. I never got it to installed properly, although I got somewhere close. I just never really took the time to learn properly how to install Arch. But I do enjoy what it offers me, which is the chance to learn a lot about Linux and give it a shot. Like, I wouldn't necessarily use Arch as a daily user, but I do love playing around with it, and I can see how it could give somebody more options and freedoms, I guess, if utilized properly, which is why I do enjoy a lot Manjaro. Like, Manjaro is really up there as one of my personal favorite Linux distributions. So yeah, that would be my three. In my top three, I would say you got Debian, Fedora, and Manjaro slash Arch.
Okay, great.
What about
For
you?
me, it's actually not that dissimilar. I really like Debian, running it headless on some system that I don't want to deal with ever so often, that I just set up and then it's supposed to keep running. That's something I really enjoy doing. I've got a tiny home server here. It's another single board computer, a WAND board. So I don't know what I'm doing here, you know. And again, the single board computer, not by Pine64. So yeah, it has an IMX6 processor, and I run Debian on it. And there are hard drives connected to it that I can then access remotely and so on. Yeah, just boring stuff. Basically, but it just runs and runs and runs. It's a solid OS, but I don't like it on the desktop at all. What I run on the desktop currently is I run Fedora, actually Fedora Workstation, with GNOME on my mobile computer, my laptop. I enjoy that quite a lot because I've been upgrading it from, I don't know, 3 or 4 releases ago. We talked about that earlier, and I'm not really sure. And it's been super solid, nothing broke, and it feels so solidly engineered, and it's also quite fast. The only problem with Fedora still is stuff like, I don't know, media codecs. You need to enable stuff like RPM Fusion for that. I would prefer that to be in the main repos, but I understand what the issue is, so I'm fine with that. And then I'm also running Arch. I was lazy with my main machine here. I didn't install it from stock. I chose Endeavor OS, which is, well, basically a fancy Arch installer, if you want to call it that. I don't know whether they would agree with it. And I'm also running ARM Linux on my secondary tiny Chromebook laptop, which is an Asus C 101P, and I installed it there like you would install Arch Linux, you know, go through everything and configure it, because that's, I think, great way to learn a lot about what you have installed on the system and which component does what, because it helps you with that. I mean, of course, there's this dependency management, so you don't have to figure it out all on your own, right? It's not like going Linux from scratch or something, but it's quite nice. And I've recently finally got around to building some package build scripts to build my own packages, because I've been previously, when I installed software on my tested software on Arch on my Pine phone, because I already also run Dankx Mobile, Arch Linux ARM on the PinePhone. I previously just went, you know, okay, what are the build instructions? Clone the Git repo, Mason, blah, blah, build, Ninja, bam, ready. And I would totally clutter my system with that, because you would then have to uninstall it manually. And that means figuring out, where did this program exactly put all those files? And how can I remove them all? And that's, therefore, I figured out package build scripts, and they are so easy. I could learn it in 2 days. And I'm not the fastest learner with stuff like that. So, yeah, that's really an advantage of Arch. But, yeah, Fedora, Debian, and I also use Ubuntu every then and now, but I'm no more as fond of it as I were. If I had to pick one, I would say Arch. Arch is definitely my favorite Linux distribution, but that doesn't mean I always prefer to run it in every under every circumstance.
I find that agreeable.
So next up is, what is our favorite PinePhone OS?
Yes.
I think I already mentioned what mine is. So what about you?
Mine is currently, it's one of the Manjaros. So I'd say Manjaro as a general like operating system has been my favorite experience on the PinePhone so far, but I haven't tried Debian yet.
So you haven't tried Mobian?
I haven't tried Mobian. Yes, exactly. That's what they call it.
You should try that.
It does seem very, very good.
It's a good topic for a video currently, even though that the Mobian Community Edition is on sale. Maybe people are looking for videos on that. Hint, hint.
Hint, hint.
Yeah. Hint, hint. Yeah, I'm not actually working on a Mobian video, despite I should, if I were out for those views, you know. Mobian definitely is really solid. It's one of my favorite.
I'm suddenly working on a Debian video.
Yeah. But I really like Arch Linux ARM. If I had to name a second favorite, currently I think it's really Manjaro Plasma Mobile, because it's quite fast, and I've installed a build a couple of days ago, and several updates went fine, no breakage, so that's good. But then I still have that feeling with Plasma Mobile that it's not yet quite there. I don't know what that is, but that might just be a feeling, but it's fairly nice. And I'm also using Plasma Desktop on Endeavor OS, so I also like the general KDE lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's very, very interesting and agreeable. I mean, my favorite thing like about the Manjaro on the PinePhone in general is how after installation how configurable it is.
Yeah.
I only managed to really compile things like the easiest. I only compiled things on Manjaro so far successfully, and it was the easiest thing. It was just like compiling on a desktop computer, and I compiled my very own game engine to give it a shot. I didn't manage to get the rendering engine working, but I did get the networking and core of the game engine working, and with that I was able to make a little app that controlled my computer's mouse, my desktop's mouse, from the PinePhone. That was very, very fun, and that's nerdy, and I like that I could do that, all of that on my phone, like just like that.
Yeah, it's, come on, it's a proper Linux computer, what do you expect?
Yeah, I know. I know, right?
Yeah.
But I do like Manjaro Lumiri because that gives it more of a phone feel, like I find, compared to most of the other desktop environments or whatever you'd call them. Because like KDE looks a lot like or Plasma looks a lot like Android, and
yeah.
Phosh feels barren in a sort of way. But I also understand that obviously I would like it to be functional before before visually being aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, my main gripe with Phosh is that they combined the launcher with the multitasking.
Yeah.
You know, that is one thing, one screen, half and half. That's I really think that's not the best choice. Especially long term. I mean, it's fine if you've got a platform that has like four apps or 10 apps, that works nicely. But when I went crazy and took that 128 gigabyte SD card and installed all those apps from source and had like, I don't know, 90 apps on my PinePhone, or maybe it were just 50, but tons of launchers.
Yeah.
That really wasn't a great experience, because you always only have that bottom half to scroll through all those apps once you've got one launched. But other than that, I really like Phosh and the GNOME Mobile Initiative. I don't want to be negative on that. So just this gripe that I feel that that's not the best decision once you get to a ton of apps. But otherwise, I think it's fine for now. And
yeah,
it looks like Purism keeps developing it, so there's hope.
I agree. I agree. And I'm sure they're going to find some easy solution. For all you know, they'll add a button and you'll press it and it'll make the launcher be full screen.
Yeah, well, they could introduce gestures. but that would be really taking a page of Lumiere's playbook. So yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready to tackle the next question?
Yes, we are. And I'll ask you, when did you first learn about Floss / Linux / just the whole free software movement?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because I really had to think hard about that. Because I think I learned about it, but didn't fully understand it before I had this first computer of mine. It may have been because I really tried to consume as much information as I could. So there was like computer shows about computers on the television. Yeah. And I think that was when I first heard of Linux and open source. Sometime around, I don't know, maybe like 1997, 1998. Yeah, that looked like nothing I would ever want to use back then. It seemed great, like a great idea, but it didn't really seem usable or user-friendly. You know, I was growing up on macOS. And then there was this system that was, I don't know, mostly a command line interface. They had an X server back then, but those programs didn't exactly look nice. And yeah, but it felt great that people would work together. And yeah, but that may have been a later discovery, that this was people working together just for fun and for, yeah, let's have great stuff on our computers that everybody can use. But once I grokked that idea, I was totally into free libre open source software and Linux. How about you?
I had an interesting journey with it as well. Because I also didn't fully understand when I first heard about it. I think when people also just refer to it as open source, it does remove the whole like point of it, where it's just like, oh, cool, you know, the code is available to everyone That's nifty. And it kind of just stops there. I didn't understand at what scale, like what that could really mean for software. I know that I would say about, you know, like let's say 2015, before I really started learning and enjoying Linux. I actually did try to use Linux on my computer, but I had this like weird thought, and I'm not sure why I had this thought. I don't know if I'm the only one who had this thought, but I feel like I am. But I thought if I installed Linux on my computer, it would do a disservice to my computer, make it run slower. And because I'm already somebody who doesn't necessarily have a whole ton of money, I wanted to make the most out of my purchase, out of my new computer. And I felt like installing Linux would have made my computer slower somehow. And it was just weird to go from that to now just using it full time and even things running faster on my computer. And I know Linux hasn't always been more efficient, and that's not its goal either, but eventually just learning about Linux as time goes on, you're just like, you just learn thing after thing. You're like, wow, this is not just an idea, it's a movement. And I think software, like a lot more software should be free and open source. I think a lot of software could benefit now. But before, I didn't know, it was hard to visualize like why you'd want something to be just open. But I also didn't understand that you could be like the entire world collaborating on one project. And even once I learned that, it's just, I don't know, it's an interesting thing to think about. And I think I know it, I understand a little bit more now, but I feel like every day I learn more about Linux, because nowadays everybody has a bit their own opinion on what Linux means to them and what free and open source means to them. A lot of people are starting to use Blender, and they see it as a free product, not as a open source free product. So that's how I viewed it as well.
Yeah.
So it took a while before it clicked.
That's common. I recall using GIMP and being like, yeah, that's great software. It costs nothing. Mm-hmm. And eventually I was like, when the next version came off, and I felt like, oh yeah. Now that's not much different, but this is working better now, and that bug is fixed, and oh, mm-hmm. I browsed the website a bit and so on, and then I figured out, yeah, okay, so that's, all these people are working together to make this? Well, that's mm-hmm. awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure whether and how I can ever contribute to it, but I like this idea. This is really cool.
Indeed, I agree. I like the community aspect of it. So even if though you're not a programmer, you can still give suggestions and whatnot. But I do also find that as I became more of a programmer, learning computer programming and stuff, I definitely got more interested in free software just from like the fact that I can personally learn from these very good, very well-written software. Speaking of GIMP, though, I have a friend. He installed Ubuntu on his computer just to use GIMP because he thought it was a Linux thing. So
he could have installed that on Windows too, right?
Yeah. But he went through that entire effort of just installing Linux to get GIMP just so he could add an alpha channel to a PNG image so he could like remove so some colors and make them invisible.
It's very important to have translucency.
Very important. I mean, that's some dedication for transparency, but I don't know. I found that a very enjoyable story. I don't know like how that happens to someone, but I also know free software actually has been in my life a little earlier, because when I was in school, like in primary school, the school computers, they had video games on them for like free time or whatever.
Okay.
And all the games that they had, they were all free games that they could easily install. But like it had like Super Tux, and it had Tux Paint, and it had like GL Tron. Oh,
nice.
And like, I know it now. When I played it, I was just like, oh, Tux, that's the cute penguin character. I love cute penguin character. Yeah. And it was fun to play a Mario type game or whatever, or play around in Tux paint when you're super young. And just, I messed it around with the stamps and built some silly pictures or whatnot. But I was doing all of that on the school's, of course, Windows computers, and it was never told to me that these were like Linux or anything. And I just found it funny that teachers or whoever was in control of the computers thought that Tux games meant free games, you know, like, yeah, monetarily free. And
yeah,
that's how I guess I was really introduced to it. And it's funny because nobody knew why it was called GLTron.
Mm.
You know, it's just the word, it's just GL Tron. Oh, wow. You know, when you're like eight or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't
care. It's fun.
Exactly.
Oh, I played that a lot too. GL Tron. Oh, my God. I really need to go back to that.
Yes.
That was nice. Yeah. I mean, I was way older then when I played it, but I really liked it. Yeah. And when you started talking, I first thought, oh, maybe they had J'ai compris, you know, Je compris, that software install that's under the wings of the KDE project, but still starts with a G, this educational software.
Yeah.
But apparently not, they just had games. I like that elementary school. Very nice. Who wants to know stuff about water and how the world works if they can play games?
When did you first learn about the Pine 64 project?
Well, it was with the first Pine 64 product, the Pine 64, I think, or Pine A64. Maybe it was called the Pine A64, I think, which was, I think, felt like a crowdfunder. I don't know if it actually was, and I should have looked that up, but I think that was around 2016 or 2015, right, when Pine 64 started. But at that time, I already had this Raspberry Pi we talked about before, and I had just gotten, I think, a Banana Pi, because that had Serial 8084, you know, connecting hard drive, and therefore I felt like, oh, I don't need another one of these. So I didn't get one. But a work colleague of mine was really excited, and he got one. And I meant to ask him how it was, but I will have to follow up on that in a later episode of this podcast, because I somehow forgot, because, well, home office, and you don't see people every day anymore, and therefore you don't really, unless you've got a reason to talk to them via video conferencing, you usually just don't currently, and therefore I forgot that. But yeah. So mm-hmm. I know someone who had that first Pine 64 device. Yeah. How about you?
Huh. I'm not exactly sure when I first started hearing about Pine 64 specifically, but oddly, I'd often just search for Linux phones. Also, oddly, I never found anything, even though plenty of Linux phones have existed throughout the last few years. But I never found exactly what I was looking for until eventually some internet personality started talking about the Pine 64 and the Librem 5. I think I heard about the Librem 5 first before I heard about Pine, and Pine was an attractive offer to me, being within my budget range.
Yeah.
But that was with specifically the Pine phone, so that would be the first product I heard from them. And from there, I saw that they had a bunch of other things that seemed very interesting, like the Pine Tab, the Pine Time, and their single board computers. It must have been someone like maybe the Linux Gamer or some, maybe Lunduke, yeah, or something. I can't really remember who specifically.
Yeah, that many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was one of them.
It was actually the Pine Front that brought you to Pine 64. Yeah, and exactly. I mean, in a way, that's yeah. true for me too. So I followed what they were doing. I almost bought a Rock Pro when that came out. Because that felt like, oh, performance, I like it. But again, I was thinking, do I really need this? And, you know, trying to be environmentally mm-hmm. conscious and therefore not buying tech products is something that I try to do, but I constantly fail at. And unluckily for Pine 64, before the Pine phone, I always decided to hold off on their products. But I have to say that with the Pine phone and with the amazing progress that has happened since I received my Pine phone mm-hmm. on June 9th, 2020, and this community that works together, and you can see the results of that, it's really amazing. And I'm looking forward to trying and using more Pine 64 product.
Mm-hmm. I would say a lot of the Pine products kind of remind me of when Linux was starting, even though I wasn't really there. The stories my elders have told me about the good old days of Linux. They, you know, I hear that, it wasn't really an alternative, especially when it was like semi-functional and didn't have any apps, which is exactly what is happening with the Pine phone. You know, there's barely any software that works well on it, although a lot of the important ones are there, and every day there's more and more and more, and it just becomes
as the maintainer
and better.
Of linmopapps.frama.io, I must disagree. There's tons of software. But you're right. Yeah. Generally, there could be more, and there are many use cases people have where there's not an app that exists, or if there's an app that exists, mm-hmm. it's not easy to install or otherwise tough mm-hmm. to set up. So yeah, you've got a point. Continue, please.
In the general sense, it's fun to see things advanced. And I remember as well when I first started using my Pine phone in, like, it was two, 3 months ago. I can't remember exactly. But I got the post-market OS one, and I got the Manjaro edition. Yeah. And they started running smooth-ish when I was using them, but I can see through time that they're running better, that they're becoming more optimized, and they're utilizing more of the hardware. It's fun to see it grow, and like they said it themselves, I'm sure, but it's fun to have a phone that updates make the phone faster, not slower.
yeah that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's right. The more and more drivers are being mainlined, and code quality improves, bugs are ironed out. You know, I was perfectly fine before the display could even run at 60 hertz. With my Pine phone, I felt like, oh yeah, it's a Linux phone, finally. I've been waiting years for this. Literally years. Yeah. You know, I was a bit late when that Librem 5 crowdfunder happened. I only backed it in late mm-hmm. October. I think they had already made their goal back then, but let's just say I didn't have that much money at the time, so I figured, I'm going to invest when it's sure that this actually happens. And that was 2017, and I had been waiting for a true Linux phone, even though I liked Android, well, at least since the Snowden revelations. I was like, oh yeah, it would be nice mm-hmm. to have something that's really running truly open source software, mostly open firmware, and so on, to get some sense of control again.
Yes.
And therefore, when the PinePhone came out and became available and was clear, okay, they're now shipping it. Well, I had originally ordered the Braveheart edition, but that one and German customs weren't exactly compatible. So it didn't have all the certifications that those German customs officers want. Also, it arrived at German customs right during the pandemic, so I did never receive that one. But sadly, but then when the Ubuntu Touch Community Edition was on sale, I think I bought it the first day or something because I didn't want to miss out on this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that's what really the excitement about those products we already have, right?
Yes.
That brings us to our last question we're going to discuss here now. Maybe there may be questions that you would like us to answer, so but then you will just have to ask them in the Discord, contact us on Twitter at TalkPine or via email pinetalk@pine64.org. And the last question we are going to answer today in this episode is, what future Pine64 product are we most excited about? You go first.
Well, I think it's between two for me. I'm very interested in the Pine Cube, funnily enough, because I did look around and like home security, like you know, home, mostly open hardware and open software, home security systems, I think are lacking, and I think it's enjoyable to see Pine do something that can help with that with the Pine Cube. At least take a few steps towards that direction, and that's why I'm excited for it. I hope that it's going to be it seems like something that's going to be fun to set up, and if it's open, it means that it's going to be much more modifiable compared to if you just get some off the shelf home security camera system today. You're going to have their system and that's it, and if there's something you don't like in their system, there's absolutely nothing you can do. I can imagine this Pine Cube having like different systems, different user interfaces for when you have set everything up to look at it and all that. So I'm excited to see where how it develops and how well it works. I just hope the camera is going to be a little better than the one that's on the Pine phone.
Isn't it the same module though?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Hopefully somebody develops some AI neural network thing that can make the image much better.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Brahm has shown, I think, some, hope I'm not butchering the pronunciation here, you know, the Postmarket US developer and fellow podcaster at the Postmarket US podcast. He has actually managed to process images even more than they are in megapixels. And he's really gotten amazing results. So maybe that should work. And
could.
I mean, if you're just using it as a security product, as long as you can roughly recognize that face and then maybe improve the raw image of that, it should be fine, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. It should do its job.
Yeah.
It should do its job. And if anything, I think it's a good stepping stone to something better. Someone has to be the first to do it.
Yeah.
And we can't always expect the first to be the best.
Yeah, that's rarely the case.
Otherwise we wouldn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
But otherwise, aside from the Pine Cube, I'm also interested in the Pine Time, since I've never really been much of a smartwatch people, but there's a few people that I've seen in my family and in the streets and on YouTube that have these smartwatches, and I'm like, you know, it's a high-tech thing and it looks cool and all that, but I don't even wear a regular watch half the time, so I personally, in general, am not super interested in smartwatches, but the Pine Time, I kind of am interested in it. I like its simplistic, rounded, square design, And, you know, I don't need something to be too powerful. I'm not going to watch, like, YouTube videos on my watch, you know. I know, right? But, you know, just something that's good enough that I could, like, receive maybe a very important message and that my watch would notify me and I'd be like, oh, Peter sent me a very important email. I should check that when I get the chance. So I can just be up to date.
Check it on your watch. Yeah.
I can check it on my watch. You know, it's just a nice to have general thing. And for the price that they're selling it right now, although not a final build or anything, I mean, $20, even if the final product was like $40, that's like a really good price for a normal watch, you know?
Yeah.
Well, maybe $40 is a bit expensive, but, you know, generally it's not ridiculous. And that's something that
I think people buy way less smart watches for way more money. You know, all those luxury products.
Yeah. They're fancy, but unnecessary, I would say, to have something any more powerful than a Pine Time, in my opinion, for a smartwatch. For the phone, like, I could benefit from a stronger CPU in the Pine phone, but for the most part, it's also about as powerful I would need it. I mean, like I said, my Android phone can run like some 3D high quality realistic looking games, but I mean, if I want to do that, I can just do that on my desktop computer, you know.
Yeah,
I don't need a phone to be as powerful as that. I like watching a YouTube video every so often on my Pine phone though, which is why often I test that particular like ability during most of my reviews. It's that as I want to be able to watch a video when I get one. Just you know, sometimes I like watching a video. But not on a watch. A watch needs to tell me the time and tell me my notifications if it's smarter.
Yeah.
And maybe tell me if somebody's breaking into my house. You know, just some important quick knowledge.
The actual product I'm most excited about is one that is likely always also to play a part in a future faster Pine phone, and that is... well, in some way, you know, the Quartz 64 that was recently announced. And the particular part that I like about that thing and that really got me excited, because, you know, it's just a single board computer, right? And that is that they are going to have a 10-inch e-ink display available at the time those launch, and that the Quartz 64 Model A will feature a dedicated e-ink panel interface capable of supporting a capacitive pen. Now, that is
pretty cool.
Something, there is a product I have, and it was, I was using it as a backdrop in my first videos, that Remarkable paper tablet. So I've got something similar to this, but I would really prefer to be able to have a device that I can install like some box standard Linux distribution on and then try and somehow get a nice interface on that one that works with e-ink to take my notes. So I'm really excited for that as a future project. And when I read this in the current announcement, I was like, oh my god, I need to save money for this. Because I'm pretty sure that the e-ink display is not going to be super cheap, because these things are pricey. But yeah, so we've both got products that we are excited about, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast, this first episode of Pine Talk. And please get the feedback in, get in touch, and subscribe to the feed. You're going to be able to listen to this on Spotify and on YouTube. But I personally believe that the best way to listen to podcasts is using some RSS capable app like I don't know, GNOME Podcasts or GPodder, and you can do that on your Pine phones, for example. Or if you don't have a Pine phone, you can use it on your Android phone with AntennaPod or whatever, and steer safe of those platforms and just use those these open web standards, because those are the best.
Yes. Remember that we have our own personal YouTube channels that you can check out for more Pine-related content. I am available. My YouTube channel is Electronion on YouTube, and Odyssey, and LinMob for Peter's stuff, which is much more intimate and real-time. And he has some very interesting experiments that he has partaked in. I suggest watching his video about installing a OS to the PinePhone from a PinePhone. It's very enjoyable. And with that, we hope that you enjoyed this first episode of the podcast, and that you'll stay tuned for some more of us, more stuff, more Pine Talky stuff.
So thank you for listening, and hear you in the next one in roughly 2 weeks. Bye.